Open Air is a call-in talk show on KZSU Stanford featuring Zen teacher Sherry Huber and hosted by Michael Gray. Every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m., we talk about the challenges and opportunities in life. Call us at 650-723-9010 to experience the freedom that comes from exploring the possibilities available to each of us today. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
What a slick introduction that was.
Yes.
Yes.
We are just rolling along, aren't we?
Rolling right along. Mm-hmm. It's great to be here today. It's a beautiful day in California.
Oh. As you have noticed, am not sitting across the table from you with my headphones on, but I'm sitting here at the monastery looking out over the Sierra Nevadas, and it is, I would say, about as beautiful as a day ever needs to be for me.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if it gets more so, I'm going to be in danger of explosion.
Yes. Yes, it's a joy to live.
And I understand there are places in the country that are under snow, and so I'm really sorry if that's, you know, if it's depressing news, what's going on here. Although I've talked to people all over this country, anyway, I don't know about what's going on in the rest of the world, but all over this country at different times, and we're having horrible weather, and they're, running around in shorts and T-shirts, so
yes.
I think we all get our share. It's
yes.
Just today we are so very blessed.
Yes. I think the weather needs to get a little more coordinated.
A little more
consistent.
I see. Like days like this every day of your life, say?
Yes.
That would work?
I guess that could be boring, though, after a while.
I'm afraid it would. Mm-hmm. I wonder, in fact, how long it would take before we were longing for rainy days and snow and fog and...
Yes.
All of the other things. I actually think about that a lot. I don't know if other people do, but just what makes it so remarkable is that it's rainy and overcast, and it starts feeling like that's all it's ever going to be, and then suddenly there's a day like this, and you just think, oh my gosh,
yes.
Life is abundant.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I remember in January and February when it was rainy and cold, that it seemed like it would never end.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden.
And, of course, it's not too much of a leap to take that to our interior life, is it?
Uh-huh.
We're going along, and, man, things are kind of overcast and drizzly. And it can seem like it's never going to change. And then magically, mysteriously, or probably magically, mysteriously, at the end of a great deal of effort, we pop through, and everything is bright and shiny, and it's hard to imagine. It's hard to get back to that place of everything is dreary and feeling kind of hopeless.
Yes.
So yeah, we were talking about that at the monastery on Sunday morning group about the trick of being able to remember that all of it is a passing show.
Mm-hmm.
The danger, that the trap that we fall into with regularity of believing that getting on the good side of the duality is what we're going for.
Yes.
Rather than a feeling of enjoyment, which is not necessarily giggling and grinning, but a feeling of enjoyment of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
That what we really truly do want is the whole human experience.
Mm-hmm.
And to experience all of that. In fact, there may be language for what I'm pointing at. I just can't think of what it is right now if I know it. But that sense of appreciation, even of that which is painful and difficult and the things that I don't want.
Yes.
Still to appreciate that this is what it is to be a human being, and I really, truly don't want to miss any of it.
Yes. Wow, and with that attitude of mind, it seems like anything can happen and we're okay.
Yes, yes. And what is the word for that? I don't know. Maybe it's peace.
Mm.
Equanimity, mm-hmm. Acceptance. And yet there's something in it that goes to the trap that we fall into that goes to the positive side of that. There is a feeling of well-being, all rightness, appreciation, enjoyment, something other than just the absence of something.
Yes.
Now, so when we're in that place of really appreciating all of life as it is, that experience in itself contains a contentment or a certain pleasure. One can see people who are having that experience and have a sense of what their life is like.
Yes.
Not always as they would choose. It doesn't meet anybody's definition of an easy ride, perhaps. It's not the ideal from a conditioned point of view, but it's a good life.
Yes.
It's a good life.
Kind
that you want to have, get to the end of a really long one of, and look back have that well done feeling.
Yes. Mm-hmm. One word that comes to mind is oneness. When you were talking about looking at someone and seeing that oneness with life.
Yeah, so someone who really is a part of life.
Mm-hmm.
Not trying to be separate from life and controlling life in order to have a preconceived notion of how life should be met. But somebody who is really one with life, coming into existence along with life, and enjoying that process.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So even if what's being enjoyed is tears.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we'll be talking about these topics and any other topics that you'd like to call in and talk with us about. You can reach us today at 650-723-9010. And if you want to email us your questions, well, you can send us an email to openair@kzsu.org. Archives of all the shows are available on Sherry's website, and that's sherryhuber.com, spelled CHERIHUBER.com. Sherry, we have a number of email questions here. Dear Sherry, I was wondering if you could talk a bit about kindness toward other people in everyday life. Recently, I've been becoming aware of what conditioning can do around kindness, how it can wreck the whole thing. It can make me think I, quote, should do something for someone. It can make me resent another person for being an imposition. It can even make me feel unexplainable awkwardness around the other person. Likewise, when others are kind to me, conditioning can come by with guilt or embarrassment or pressure to do something in return. At the same time, what I'm noticing is that sometimes I stumble upon an act of kindness that doesn't have any of that, that just feels good. Something like chocolate in my heart. As I notice more and more, it appears that there are very limited opportunities for that day to day. But I suspect that might be a haze of conditioning too. What are your thoughts on seeking opportunities for kindness in everyday life? Hmm. From one of our listeners.
Well, that's great. Well, of course, I think a lot about that. I have many thoughts on that. First of all, the thing that we can know is that conditioning, that illusion of a separate self that is going to survive, that I that has to be the center of the universe regardless of what does or does not happen with anyone or anything else, that survival system is going to turn everything into a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what it does.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. Writer could be walking along, maybe not walking along, let's be even more spiritual than walking along, sitting in meditation, suddenly there's this huge bolt out of the blue, and enlightenment is there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Can you picture it? Now, what everybody thinks and idealizes is, and then that's the end of it. There's no more having to write these questions in because, you know, I've arrived. I don't have any more conditioning. I'm just clear and present, and everything works for me, and I'm forever thin and rich and successful, and people, rather than hating me for being that way, adore me, worship at my feet, in fact. Well, the fact of the matter is, as soon as possible, at the very first possible second, conditioning is going to be in there trying to turn that experience against the person.
Yes.
Using all of the same techniques that it uses to turn everything against us. So whenever we are looking at life through a conditioned filter, when conditioning is looking through life and looking at life and giving us information, it's all going to be some degree of miserable.
Mm-hmm.
A little miserable, a little discontent, a little dissatisfaction, restless eyes, just don't quite feel the, to just abject misery. Okay? When we look at life from authentic nature, from center, from here, from clarity, from presence, it's all good. It really is as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
So we can tell. Now, a subject like kindness, we would think, kindness, well, okay, that's in the centered part of the program. You know, that's a good thing. We all agree. Kindness is a good thing. Comes from the heart. Makes the heart happy. Okay, this is a... But as soon as conditioning has a chance to get a hold of it, it's going to take kindness, love, generosity, abundance, sweetness, caring, patience, any thing that it turns its attention to, it's going to destroy. Okay, so
mm-hmm.
we got to get that clear to begin with. Then, so we don't assess anything from that perspective. In
mm-hmm.
fact, any assessment that goes on, any time I am being observed and evaluated, it's coming from conditioning, because the heart never does that. The heart doesn't second guess. It's not going along saying, well, now, did that come from the heart? Was that centered? Was that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's always ego. That's
mm-hmm.
always that survival system trying to get itself into the spotlight. So how can we address, then, this subject? I want to be more kind. I want more kindness in my life. I'd like to be a kinder person. Okay? So that's what I'm going to do. Well, it's very easy, because the person who needs that experience, who wants that experience, is the very one who thought of it. That
mm-hmm.
that would be, in this case, the person writing the email.
Yes.
All right. So the focus, is it a him or a her?
It's a her.
Okay. The focus is on her bringing kindness into her life.
Mm-hmm.
And from that kind place, others will be embraced in kindness as well.
Mm-hmm.
So kindness, when we're living in kindness, we don't have to do kind things. We don't have to think of some kind thing to do. We don't mm-hmm. have to be self-conscious about kindness, because kindness is as much a part of our reality as is air or
mm-hmm.
water.
Yes.
It just is. It's
yes.
what we live in. It's what we live on. So someone brings kindness, it probably actually wouldn't be noticed as kindness.
Mm.
It would just be an interaction with another person.
Mm-hmm.
So does that make sense?
Yes.
I mean, in our
yes.
conditioned reality, we think, yeah, but some things are kind and some things aren't. Not when we live in kindness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the person who lives in kindness is not in danger of not noticing when someone is kind, because what we notice is that kindness is, that people are kind.
Yes.
Interactions are kind. And in fact, it's kind of shocking because we begin to see interactions as kind that previously we would not have identified as kind.
Uh-huh.
In fact, we might have identified them as unkind.
Uh-huh.
So in that way, we don't have to be concerned about forgetting to be sensitive to somebody or to say thank you for a kindness or that sort of thing, because we're always sensitive to people when we're living in kindness, and we're always saying thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So all of this stuff, it's just so handy and helpful to practice it with ourselves. And when we get 100% going with ourselves, we'll realize that without our knowing, it has spilled out, spilled over onto everybody else in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just as when we, back in the old days of unconsciousness, we were identified with conditioning, we didn't know it, but that was spilling over onto
mm-hmm.
and into everybody else's life
mm-hmm.
as well.
Yes. Yes. So when we live from that place of kindness, everywhere we see is kindness.
Yes. And kindness then, from that place, has many, many, many synonyms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's generosity, it's gratitude, it's expansiveness, it's inclusiveness, it's one with all that originates from center,
mm-hmm.
which everything does. It's
yeah.
just when we're identified with conditioning, we can't see that.
Yes. Fascinating. Sherry, the phones are ringing here.
Good.
I'd like to welcome Lori from Campbell. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello.
Hello.
Good evening.
How are you?
Doing
We're
very
good.
Well, thank you. And you?
Well, I'm doing fine, thank you.
All right. What's going on?
Well, I wanted to call in. Well, I was moved to call in. And thank you for your books and Open Air is great. I actually came across your book, Sherry, a couple of months ago and just dove into them. I think I have about 8 of them now. And
Very good.
They're great. And I actually signed up for the retreat. I'll be going next week, so I'm very excited about that.
Oh, lovely.
So I'm really
I'll try to hold the weather for you.
Please do. That'd
okay.
be nice. And I love, so I'm actually pretty close by, so I'm enjoying the nice weather anyway. But what I'm finding is happening, and I think this is probably pretty normal, and I believe you mentioned it in your books, but it seems that now once I'm turning the spotlight, if you will, on my conditioning, it seems to be growing much stronger.
Ooh.
And I don't know if that's just because I'm seeing it or if, in fact, it is getting stronger, but it's I feel like I'm in, how do you say, not a fight, but... It's being,
hell?
I'm sorry?
Hell?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I don't know the answer to that question either. And what I go to with it is, say you're in a relationship with somebody, and you begin to realize that in this relationship, the other person corrects you all the time.
Okay.
No matter what you say, the other person corrects you.
Right.
And just you just suddenly become aware of it. You might become aware of it because somebody else mentions it, or you read something, or it just pops into your conscious awareness. Now, is it worse now that you've noticed it? Or did you just notice it,
right.
and now you're seeing how bad it is?
Right.
Okay? Now, the two of you have been in this relationship, and of course, you're doing your part, but we're not looking at that right now. So, it's just that other person who's usually the problem in any relationship.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so you decide that you're going to mention it.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I've noticed that kind of no matter what I say, you correct me. Now, can you guess what the response is? Well, no, I don't. Okay, which, you know, this is the point at which we say, I rest my case.
Right.
But you're going to now bring consciousness to each one of these events. And what's going to happen is that everything is going to escalate.
Yep.
Yep. That's how it goes. The system is trying to maintain itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's being threatened. It goes on the offensive. And you can just know it's going to heat up and heat up and heat up until it comes to some kind of breaking point.
Great.
Now, here's the good news. You can outlast it. And you actually, I don't know how many books you've read, but even if you've gotten through one.
More than one.
You know that I say this, okay? Conditioning, can only do so much.
Right.
Now, it actually, of course, can't do anything. It just talks you into doing things.
Exactly.
So it says things, you feel bad.
Exactly.
It talks you into eating stuff that's not good for you, and you eat it. It can't actually eat it. It has to get you to do its dirty work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, which, of course, is a big part of the beating, because then what a fool you are for having bought into that.
Yep.
Okay, so all you need to do is watch it. You don't have to argue with it or correct it or fight with it or come up with plans or schemes or anything else. All you need to do is just watch it. Don't go along with it. Just watch it. And it has no energy to continue its side of the game.
Okay, that makes sense. That's where I seem to not be able to. It's like it gets its hold on me, and right now I'm feeling sick because of a circumstance that happened today, and I know it's my conditioning, and I had this great training class, and the trainer said one comment, and of course I focused in on the negative comment, and that affected me. And I know that's my conditioning doing that, but I'm having a physical reaction to it, and I can't seem to just let go, watch and detach from it.
Yeah, here's the thing. Let's say you were 100 pounds overweight and never noticed.
Okay.
Okay? And one day you notice.
Right.
And then you realize you can't get rid of the 100 pounds.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's how it works.
Mm.
It's going to take time. And the time from noticing to having the weight gone is going to be periodically difficult, rewarding, scary, upsetting, disheartening, thrilling. Okay?
Yep.
So what you've signed on for in this waking up and letting go of suffering is seeing through all of this. So now you get to see how conditioning maintains itself in your life. It makes you sick when you are a way that you shouldn't be.
Or scared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's making you sick, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so what you can do, there's a technique. What it's got you believing is that you're feeling that way because you did something wrong or because something happened that made you not look good or whatever.
Okay.
Okay?
Or because I'm choosing to buy into something somebody said.
That's right.
Maybe it's true or whatever.
That's right. Well, that's the California New Age post-therapy suffering. You with me?
Yeah.
Yeah, before you just believe, it means I'm garbage. That's why I feel sick.
Yeah.
Now you know it shouldn't be making you feel sick, and so the fact that it is the next layer of proof that there is something wrong with you. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So, the fact of the matter is, there's a sensation in your body that is causing that series of reactions.
Mm.
And when you can find that sensation in your body, the thing that you'll realize is, that sensation doesn't mean there's something wrong.
Okay.
Can you go with me on that?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're walking along. I imagine it's happened today, and your attention gets distracted. You get involved in something.
Right.
And then you are called back to this situation. And when you are, you feel sick.
Right.
Okay? So your attention is going to something in your body. And that something triggers this whole series of reactions.
Okay.
Okay. So I want you, are you going to be home this evening?
Yeah, later.
Okay. So when you have a chance mm-hmm. to just sit down for, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever you can manage.
Okay.
And just look at your body and watch how the thoughts arise, the emotion is there, okay? You go to the situation, see how your body feels, and begin to follow that feeling in your body and see if you can get as subtle as you can. See if you can find the origin of that sensation.
Hmm.
Okay?
Okay?
Now, two things happen. One, I already gave you, that sensation in your body doesn't mean that.
Okay.
All right? And now, if you had just the thought of it, without a connection to a feeling in your body, mm-hmm. it would just be a thought.
Right.
The thought would pass through like any other. It's the connection.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's the, when you're falling dive, we lay it out as first there's movement, then there's sensation. We have a thought about that, a label, a story, an emotional reaction, and a behavior pattern that goes with it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing is following that back and realizing that sensation does not mean that you should feel anything in particular.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. So that's one piece of it. The other piece of it is that when you're focused in that way, you cannot maintain the sequence.
Oh, okay.
So for the period of time that you're focused in that way, you're free of the experience.
Hmm.
As soon as your mind gets distracted, then you get set up again for the sensation in your body. Your attention goes to that, and this whole thing comes into play. There's the story. This is what it means. This is how you feel. You're sick again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So this is awareness practice.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're doing all the time with everything.
Wow.
Yeah. And you remember the 100 pounds?
Right.
It's not going to be over tonight.
Right.
Yeah.
Darn.
So the thing that keeps us going, the thing that is actually what takes us out of suffering, is that we get more fascinated with how all this stuff works than we have willingness to believe it and suffer.
Got it.
Yeah. So you are now a detective. You are finding out how suffering happens. How does this work? Why does... Okay. What about that mean? Wait a minute now. How do I? It's way, way, way more interesting than telling the story one more time and feeling sick and beating yourself up for not being over it.
Right.
Yeah.
So I imagine in the retreat, I'll get a lot of experience at practicing this.
Yes, you will.
Okay.
You will come out armed and dangerous.
Thank you.
Have a great time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well,
good night.
I'll try practicing tonight.
Very good.
All right.
Let me know.
Okay, thanks, Sherry.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sure, it's exciting to just jump sort of right into those sensations, see where they go.
Oh, it is. And that is such a, can you remember the last time you felt like that? I know I can.
Yes.
I mean, it's awful. It's awful to be caught in one of those suffering loops. And yet, when we have the tools to be able to take advantage of that, to start getting that distance, starting to disidentify from the content and move back into that place of just fascinated observation with, wow, how can that make a person feel like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how is that possible?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you strike a match and boom, there's a flame. Wow, that's amazing. Here's this little thing, looks like nothing.
Yes.
You strike it against this particular thing, and that happens. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
It's just like that with awareness practice.
Fascinating.
Except that, you know, with the match, we can say, oh, yippee, I get to have a fire tonight. And with the stick from this, I don't want to put words on her experience, but sick from this thing that happened,
yes.
You know, that the fire in the fireplace, now that's thrilling. This thing is not. I want to get it behind me. I want to forget about it. I don't, you know, but to have that curiosity, that same kind of, this is amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we move right on through it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Next up on KZSU at 6 p.m., we have DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian. That's from 6 to 8 p.m. She has some great world music. And then from 8 to 10 p.m., we have Mike with The Baptism of Solitude. We'll be back with more open air in just a moment. Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. If you'd like to join our conversation today, you can give us a call at 650-723-9010. Sherry, we have some more email questions here.
Excellent.
People have been busy at their computers. Dear Sherry, I've always felt that I'm pretty good at unconditional love. But over the last several months, I've been looking at it more closely, and now I'm confused. Part of me, a powerful but childlike part, believes that the whole point of being alive is to pour out unconditional love. But there's another part of me that I've become more aware of since I started therapy. This part wants to defend me against injustice and cruelty. It wants to make sure that I feel I'm being valued by the people I interact with. It tells me that it wants me to know how precious I am. That sounds good to me, but the problem is that it seems to get in the way of unconditional love. For example, I unconditionally love someone who seems to me to be abusing me. Should I end the relationship because I feel hurt? That's not really unconditional love, is it? Or should I go along with what's happening because I love the person? I don't want to deprive myself of the joy of giving love, but I also don't want to let other people mistreat me. Sometimes it seems like I have to choose between giving my heart and having self-esteem. I can't do both. It would be great to hear some of your thoughts on all this. As a longtime fan of your writings, I'd like to put in a request also. Would you consider writing a book entirely about projection? From one of our listeners.
Well, I have actually considered that. And that's a good encouragement. Because projection, good for her. Her?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. It just had that tone. Because
yes.
Projection, yeah. Okay. So, gosh, where to start? There's so much in that. I would say the first thing that I point that I want to make that takes us back to Lori, who we were talking to earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Unconditional love, like kindness and everything else, begins at home, and that is so counter to our conditioning that it's probably the most difficult thing that we can do to get over this idea that what we're here to do is neglect ourselves in the service of everyone and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And we call that love, doing that. I call it self-hate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once we are included, then again, everybody else is included.
Mm-hmm.
So when that unconditional love and acceptance fills this heart, then everyone else is just automatically embraced into that. But trying to love unconditionally everyone else at the expense of the person attempting to do it, it just doesn't work. It's a wonderful way the system is set up. It just plain won't work. So that's the first piece of it, that unconditional love starts at home. The second is that we can unconditionally love someone and not be in their sights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm in relationship with someone who it feels that their way of being with me is abusive. Now, it could very well be that they are not abusive at all, and it's just where I am in my own awareness that it feels abusive to me. It doesn't matter. It feels abusive. And so I can unconditionally love that person and not be available for what feels like abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, within myself, I can be working on what abuse is and what feels abusive to me and why I think that and where that comes from and what that means to me. And I'm paying really close attention, and I'm working on that, working on that, working on that. So at some point, I may decide, well, that person wasn't being abusive at all. It's just that that person was just exactly like my father, who, in fact, was abusive to me, or so it felt when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that kind of psychological understanding. But there's the point is that there's nothing about loving unconditionally that means we have to do or not do anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that I know of in awareness practice that says you have to do this, you can't do that. It's a matter of growth, of expansiveness, of learning, deepening practice, of letting go, opening the heart. So that's a process that goes on. So many people say to me, I hate my job, and so I figure that's where I should be doing my work, because if I were a really spiritual person, then I would be happy anywhere. Well, you know, only ego is going to make that kind of ridiculous contest. And why would it do that? Because you're going to fail. You hate your job, leave it.
Mm-hmm.
Find another job. If you're on your 14th job and you hate it the way you hated that first one, then you can say, you know what, I don't think I'm gonna leave here and get another job.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know this song, and I know that I'm just going to repeat it, so I need to start looking at other things.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's I hate this job and I think there's something else that I would like to do, and I would like to try that, but I'm going to stay here because that'll make me a more spiritual person, I think that it makes me a self-hating person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So not to make a contest, not to have an idea about unconditional love, and certainly not to let egocentric karmic conditioning define unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
Which it's very willing to do. So
yes.
You'll do, it's the back to the kindness, right? You do something kind and the voice says, well, that didn't seem very kind.
You know,
that doesn't seem unconditional. I mean, if you were really unconditionally loving, you would be able, that is the voice of egocentric karmic conditioning. The heart doesn't talk to us in that way. Now, that was a very long email, and I can't remember if there were other points that I haven't covered, but maybe you can help me out if there were.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. She's talking about a part that she's become aware of in therapy that wants to defend her against injustice and cruelty, wants to make sure that she's being valued by the people that she interacts with.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Which we could probably guess is... also egocentric karmic conditioning, and that doesn't mean that that's not a stage that we want to go through.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that we have to act it out. We don't have to let other people know that this is going on. It's just an internal process, and that's what I'm working with, because that's where I am right now.
Yes, yes. Another piece of it I find interesting is... She writes, sometimes it seems like I have to choose between giving my heart and having self-esteem. I can't do both.
Yeah, and that's kind of a red flag for me, because to me it is never a choice.
Yes.
That is never a choice that we're required to make. Now, if I am choosing people who are not good for me, if I'm choosing people who make me feel bad, and I am defining unconditional love as being able to tolerate people mistreating me And then I'm having trouble having self-esteem, good self-esteem, while this is going on. That's something really important to look into. But when we are giving our hearts fully and our hearts are open and we are, the process starts with us, so it's not, I'm not giving my heart despite the
yes.
pain and suffering that folks inside might be feeling.
Yes.
What I'm receiving back is caring and kind and loving, then there isn't going to be that kind of choice at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you said earlier, don't let ego define unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you could extend that, don't let ego define anything.
Yes.
As you were talking about with kindness.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's funny, as we go along with this, we can get ourselves to the point where we realize that we can't talk about anything.
Yes.
Everything that we talk about really does miss the point.
Yes.
So what we're doing is we're describing a tree until we have the opportunity to see a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we see the tree, we don't need to talk about it anymore. We don't
yes.
need to compare it and judge it and decide, and is this a good... Although people do, have you noticed that?
Yes.
Yeah, they've got a tree in their yard, but, you know, it's not. It doesn't look quite the way they want it to look, or it's really not quite in the right place, so they just cut it down. And, so you can tell I find that unfortunate. But what we're doing is talking about these things until we have the experience.
Yes.
Not that what we're saying is true or accurate. So I'm talking about unconditional love and opening your heart and good self-esteem and protecting yourself. And we're talking about these things as if they're real, you know, as if they're quantifiable and something that we can say, yes, there, that's what it is. There's good self-esteem. Buy one of those. What we're doing is just pointing in a direction, and then we go in there and we start exploring and looking and seeing and learning about ourselves mirrored in that process.
Mm-hmm.
The writer was talking about projection.
Mm-hmm.
And we're owning our projection. We're learning to see what we're putting out there onto somebody else. You know, I feel someone out there is worthy of my unconditional love. Well, what am I projecting onto that person?
Mm.
And why that person? Why would one person be worthy of that and not another? Why do I pick certain people to love unconditionally rather than just anybody who life happens to put in my path? How does all that work? Conditioning has us believe that there are right answers. And, in fact, conditioning would have us believe that it knows the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll put that right answer out for us and challenge us to meet its standards. But in awareness practice, what we're getting to is there isn't anything to know, and there isn't anyone to know it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking at these things, we're kind of taking them apart, until, really, what we're going for is there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from a conditioned point of view, that's a horrifying notion. But from the heart, it's heaven.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
It is.
Taking apart until there's nothing left.
Yes. Until the nothing that's left is everything that is.
Mm-hmm.
And what we cease to do is position ourselves outside of life, identified with this conditioned mind that knows and decides and judges and criticizes and compares, and because that's until we start to wake up, that's where we live life.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
as we take things apart, what we're taking apart is that illusion of separation.
Mm-hmm.
What we're dismantling is this ego that tries to live outside of life, being the subject with life as the object. So we're dismantling that. We're seeing that's not true. Now, we're not putting anything in there that is true, because that's just going to be another thing to dismantle. So, well, that's not true. That's not true. I don't think that that's true. I don't believe that. No, I don't really think that that's so. Okay, and so finally, well, what's there? Well, nothing. All right. How relaxing.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. We'd love to hear from you today if you want to call in. Our phone number here is 650-723-9010. Sherry, the name of one of your books is The Key.
And the name of the key is Willingness.
Willingness, yes, which is what came to mind as you were describing the process of looking and taking apart and taking apart and seeing what all our beliefs are.
Yeah. And, of course, what makes it hard to be a human being is that we are doing this in spite of a force that exists within our lives that is doing everything possible to stop us from doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to see, and we're conditioned not to see, to be afraid to see, to feel bad when we see.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to wake up, and there's a force in us that we have, in fact, thought was us until,
mm-hmm.
you know, perhaps moments ago. We're trying to wake up, and this force is trying to get us to go back to sleep, to go unconscious, to numb out, to veg out, to not be aware.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Force that doesn't want us to wake up to see how everything works, to see what those beliefs are.
Yes. Now, and people, you know, rightfully so, think, well, that's crazy. Why would that be the case? And that's one of those questions that we just can't answer, except that everybody who tries to do it notices that that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So why would there be a force in me that wants me to be ignorant and deluded? Well, because it gives that force in my life a great deal of power. And as I wake up and see things as they are, I take back the power from that force. It loses power. And I, as a centered, living in the present, part of life, energy, gain power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would it be set up that way? Well, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
but it is.
Mm-hmm.
And whether, you know, whether we're in whatever system you want to explore, people who have tried to figure this out, they've come to the same conclusion, and they've given the parts different names.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, some people call it God and the devil. Some people call it consciousness and unconsciousness. Some people call it egocentricity and centered self.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Buddha
mm-hmm.
nature and an illusion of separation. Whole mind and small mind. Lots of different names, lots of different traditions. Looking at it, people getting to the same thing. Huh. There's something in us. We can't even say there's something out there. We wish it were out there. There's something in us that seems to want us to suffer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It, which is not actually my experience, but that's how it looks.
Mm-hmm.
There is something in us that wants to suffer. It's not actually that it's interested in me suffering.
Mm.
It wants to suffer, and
uh-huh.
it wants all the life force to put into its center of the universe suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
in the email class recently, in response to something somebody said, though they were talking, they were using the, it's all about me.
Yes.
And my comment was something along the lines of 6 billion plus people playing the, following the it's all about me agenda creates an ugly world.
Yes. Yes.
So what is that that wants it to be all about me?
Mm-hmm.
No matter what kind of suffering results from that.
Mm-hmm.
What name do we want to give that?
Mm-hmm.
I just like to call it egocentric karmic conditioning, because to me that's the best description for it. It's completely egocentric. It's karmic in the sense that it's old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't start with me, and it's not going to end with me, and
mm-hmm.
it's conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
I've been taught to be the center of the universe. That's the system that we grow up in. So egocentric karmic conditioning, there it is. It's easier for me not to take it personally when it has a label like that. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't make it up. I didn't start it. My relationship with it is to try to distinguish it from center, so that I can experience myself as being a part of life, a part of center, a part of non-separate reality, rather than caught up in that I, me, my approach of, you know, trying to get the best for me. Get it all for me. Forget the best. Get it all for me. Whatever the all is in the moment.
A me, me, me.
Me, 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 me.
Yes. Yes.
And we all know that one, don't we?
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Sherry, I have a short email question here.
Okay.
I'm trying to understand how you should not take personally how others react if they are our projections. Many authors these days are saying don't take anything personally. But how can you not if how others react is your own projection? I realize I assume people don't like me, and it's my own self-hate I'm seeing. How do I change that? I suppose with awareness practice, you don't worry about such trite stuff. Thank you from a listener.
Well, that was action-packed too, wasn't
it? Yes.
So, once again, what we're sorting out is what is conditioning and what is authentic.
Mm-hmm.
So, excuse me, from authentic self, from center, from the heart, there is not going to be a projection that people don't like me.
Mm-hmm.
That's just simply never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it good to know that there's something like that that we can count on?
Yes.
So when there is a projection that everybody hates me, and now I got it, this is self-hatred, okay? Everybody hates me, that's the projection that's going on. Where is that coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in my world, in my way of talking about it, that's coming from egocentric karmic conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty is, I have identified myself as that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it seems like, and our language completely supports this, I am projecting, excuse me, I've been talking too much lately. I am projecting that everybody hates me. Therefore, I'm responsible for that projection.
Mm.
So it's my fault because I have this self-hate. So what's wrong with me? I have self-hate, and I project that out, and then I think, so how could I not take that personally? It's a logical progression that the writer has gone through.
Yes.
When we get it, that there are two different ways of approaching life, authentically and from egocentric karmic conditioning, if we can just use it, even if, you know, it's not your experience, if you can use it as a working premise, a working hypothesis, that the heart does not project self-hatred,
mm-hmm.
then we can guess that it's coming from egocentric karmic conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So if I am not identified with that, if it is simply a conditioned system of reacting to life, why would I want to take that personally?
Mm-hmm.
It is not a part of my authentic nature. It's something that was added later as a part of social conditioning. It's a learned reaction to life. Almost everybody has it. It's not personal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those are... You know, those are stages of awareness practice that we want to delve into and not take my word for it, certainly, but just, again, you know, we're pointing at that tree and talking about it until we have a chance to experience it. So I lay these things out for people, and then they can find out for themselves. They can prove to themselves that they have the same experience. I can be very confident about that because I'm pretty sure they will have the same experience.
Yes.
Okay, but it doesn't matter that, you know, that I've laid it out. I didn't lay it out originally. Somebody laid it out for me. That's how this gets, you know, passed down from person to person to person. So it was laid out for me. I did that process. My teacher would say it's not what, it's how. I'm sure you've heard me talk about that. I would just look at him like he was from another planet. I mean, what does that mean? It's not what, it's how. It's gibberish. It's nonsense. And he would say it with so much sincerity and conviction, and I knew that it was meaningful to him, and it was nothing to me. And how long later did it finally, you know, little blips of light, light, and then, I get it! I see! Oh, I see what he means! And this entire universe of awareness opened up for me. Okay, so that's the process that we're going through in awareness practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So little glimpses, little glimpses.
Yeah.
Big dose of willingness.
Yeah, and the earlier caller who's going to the retreat.
Yes.
I suspect that would be a retreat that would be very good for this person who wrote in.
Uh-huh.
If it's a there's nothing wrong with you retreat.
Mm-hmm.
The nothing wrong with you retreat is designed to take us through an awareness of self-hatred, of projection, and how to go beyond it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's at the Zen Monastery Practice Center.
Yes.
Yes.
I hear by the sound of the bagpipes that it's time for us to say I do.
It's a flute.
Oh. I knew that, Michael.
Yes. Yes. Sherry, do you want to give a little bit of homework and people can mull that over and email us some questions?
Yeah. Let's see. What might be a good one?
Well, we've been looking at today.
Well, I just asking you that gave me an idea.
Oh, let's hear it.
How about if we all look at what we are projecting onto others that it would really serve us to bring back and own for ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I hear myself say something like, nobody ever listens to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So can I pull that projection back and realize, gosh, I really need to listen to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then our listeners can email us what they say.
Yeah. Yes, they can.
That sounds wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to thank all of our listeners and our callers today. I'd like to thank Jay and Michael for their stellar help once again. People can reach us by email at openair@kzsu.org. You can also find archives of the show at Sherry's website, which is sherryhuber.com. That's spelled sherryhuber.com. And we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.